under mute. It falls under electronic devices. And Dr. Rack, would you please do a roll call?
Yes. Dr. Byrne?
Here.
Ms. Krieger?
Here.
Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. James?
Here.
Mr. Lohi?
Here.
Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson?
Here.
And Dr. Red is here. We do have quorum.
Thank you. We'll dive right into the initial investigative reviews. And first up is case number 21-150. Tracy, would you read us the summary, please?
Yes, case 21-150, the complaint is Villa Lincoln County, respondent is Madeline B. Indiana. On June 4th, 2021, Jackie A. Ford, repeating on direction 1, was presented to respondent for evaluation of anxiety and seizure issue. Diagnostic performed and dog was discharged. Later in the night, the dog passed away. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the care practice act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded to order by Harris, 32-32-22, medical incompetence, and the practice of veterinary medicine for failure to administer or recommend a sedative to the dog in breach of a degree prior to performing diagnostics, which possibly led to Ferguson-Bowman syndrome and blood drug. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-0.
Thank you, and we have the respondent and counsel. Would you care to address the board?
Yes.
Please come forward. Would you please state your names for the record?
Madeline Beatty.
And Reed Campbell on behalf of Dr. Beatty.
Thank you, and I give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Madeline Beebe, and I would like to respond to the investigative committee's recommendation in this case. Jackie, a female spay French bulldog, presented to us at his animal hospital on June 4th, 2021. This is the first and only time that she was seen by our hospital, although I understand that she had been seen previously at other veterinary hospitals. The presenting complaint for the appointment was anxiety and vomiting. The owners had recently boarded Jackie, and when they picked her up, they were informed that she had experienced tenotomesis several times while boarded, and she continued vomiting with some blood after she was brought back home. The owners also reported that a previous veterinarian had not believed that Jackie had an underlying medical problem, and that they had been offended when the other veterinarian had only offered them fluoxetine as a treatment option, a medication which the breeder said was not safe or effective and which the owners indicated she had taken before with poor results. The owners wanted a veterinarian to listen and take them seriously about the fact that Jackie had been anxious, at times aggressive, and would have hematemesis associated with any stressful trigger. I took extra measures to listen attentively to the owners and assured them that I believed them. We then discussed several separate and possibly related issues with Jackie and started working on a diagnostic and treatment plan together. My top recommendation for Jackie was to see a neurologist and possibly a behaviorist, but the owners declined and indicated that they were not interested in any type of referral. As a result, the next step we discussed was diagnostics, something the owners stated had not previously been done. The investigative committee had no issues or concerns with the diagnostics or treatment plan I developed, but expressed a concern that I was potentially medically incompetent for not administering a sedative to Jackie prior to performing the diagnostics because she was a brachycephalic breed. I'm unaware of any ironclad rule that requires every brachycephalic dog to be given a sedative prior to performing diagnostics. While a sedative is always an option, it's a judgment call for the veterinarian to make based on the individual situation. In the past, I've given sedatives to patients before performing diagnostics, but the truth of the matter is that I did not feel it was necessary at the time with Jackie on June 4th, 2021. Although the dog was anxious and excited, this is not at all unusual for dogs at our hospital, especially brachycephalic dogs. As I indicated in my response, my staff and I took extra care and precautions handling Jackie as we performed the diagnostics given her anxiety level and behavioral issues. After collecting blood, we attempted a cystocentesis using ultrasonography, but the dog had urinated already and her bladder was too small to collect urine. She was then taken to the radiography corner. Jackie continued to pant and vocalize just as she had done in the room. When we were finishing the radiographs, I went to inform the owners that Jackie was fine but remained stressed. They laughed and said that was no less than they expected, and they hoped our diagnostics would help us all understand why she would get so stressed and sick. When the radiographs were done, I went to show them to the owners. I pointed out her gas-distended stomach and said that while there was no sign of a sliding hernia, the degree of aerophagia and gastric distension could possibly explain her discomfort and vomiting during and after stress. I prescribed gabapentin and trazodone according to their request for presumed situational anxiety and informed them that we would call with the results of lab work the next day as we would be sending it to Audex. Prior to leaving, I recommended a meropenem injection for Jackie since she was clearly stressed and had a history of vomiting after stressful times. The owners declined the meropenem injection I recommended and said she'll be fine when we get home. I asked them to let us know if they needed anything that night and said I would call them the next day with the results of the lab work. The owners paid in full and left happy. The next morning, we were shocked to hear that Jackie had unexpectedly passed away at home overnight. I thought long and hard about everything that we did for Jackie, and I remain convinced that the medical workup and diagnostics performed were appropriate. Hindsight is 20/20, and it's easy after the fact to second guess things. But in this case, no one can say that the outcome for Jackie would have been any different if she had been administered a sedative. Even the investigative committee admits this in the recommendation when they state that the lack of a sedative possibly led to sudden death due to brachycephalic syndrome. This is pure speculation on their part as we have no definitive cause of death, let alone evidence that the death was causally related to anything I did or failed to do. In light of the foregoing, I respectfully disagree with the investigative committee's recommendation and any suggestion that I violated any statute or regulation of the Practice Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, anything to add?
No, thank you.
And you may step back. We have no appointment for today in this case. And Dr. James, you are the lead.
So this is case 22-150, and this is a difficult situation because I do think, you know, one of the points made was that hindsight's 20/20, and I think we would all look back on this and go, would sedation have helped? Would sedation have prevented this? But I tend to lean towards, I don't use it in every pet either. And to say that I could have foreseen that or anyone could have foreseen that, to me, doesn't feel justified. I don't think there was enough there to really say as a veterinarian, oh my God, you definitely need to sedate this pet right now. So while I can see where the investigative committee was going, I'm just not sure that I can agree with that recommendation based on what we have. So any other comments before?
No, I agree on that. And the necropsy was not done in this case, is that correct?
No.
Yeah, so I'm gonna echo Mr. Lohi before he even says it. Necropsy would truly tell us what happened here, or has a better chance of telling us what happened here. But yeah, I can't, going through this, say that this is 100% due to the fault of not using a sedative. I think that's a little much of a stretch for me.
Yeah, I agree. There's something else going on with this dog, too. The blood work, which we didn't have at that time, later on we did, and that was electrolyte analysis. That combined with the history of at one point having collapse and dull lip and some other signs, in the back of my mind is a possibility that this was an acidemia. And a brachycephalic syndrome to me is not something I associate with sudden death several hours after the dog was stressed. So I agree, we don't know what happened to the dog, but to to joke that this was due to failure to sedate this dog. The other thing with brachiocephalic that you have to consider is because of the variable response to sedatives, sometimes sedation is the wrong thing to do with a brachiocephalic because their muscles can relax and you can put them into respiratory distress with your sedative. So it's totally a judgment of the doctor at that moment. And I just don't see it in anything at the time to directly relate to the dog's demise.
Yeah, and along with that, I mean, we have a dog that's vomiting.
Vomiting?
Yeah, and if I sedate a vomiting dog, I mean, just like putting him under anesthesia, it's like
vomiting with what?
With blood, yeah. So, I mean, is it
discussing it differently had they have done that, right?
Yeah.
Like, you would have been going, well, why did you do that part? I just stand behind. I'm not sure that in looking back at this, I can say that there was a failure of the Practice Act rule. So, in the case of 22-150, I'm going to make a motion that we find no violations of our Practice Act rules.
Second.
A motion on the floor and a second to find no violation in case 21-150. Any further discussion? Because I would think, Dr. Halsey, we're talking a little bit about the sedation, because I think we've heard, we've had past cases with brachial bleeds where the anesthesia or the sedation was the issue or associated with that, and there was a bad outcome the other way because you did use it. So I appreciate you commentary on that for the record. Any other discussion? And let's take a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And that motion passes. 21-150 is dismissed. Next up, we gotta get somebody on the phone.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask that everybody speak into their microphones, please?
Who can't you hear? I moved mine away, so can you hear me?
Oh, I can't hear
some
I can hear some of the other guys.
Tracy, would you read us the summary, please?
Yes, case 21-139, the complainant is Patricia Neff. The respondent is Sarah Rios, DVM. On May 9th, 2021, Roscoe, a 5-year-old male golden doodle, was presented to respondent for a suspected ear infection. Respondent examined the dog. She confirmed the dog's ear infection and offered treatment remedies to complainant. After discussion, complainant approved Osteria ear treatment along with cleaning, shaving, and hair pulling of the dog's ears. When complainant arrived to pick up the dog, she stated the ears were red and bleeding and the dog continuously shook his head. Respondent explained that the dog's ears tips were likely bleeding due to head shaking from the recent ear cleaning and treatment, and she may have nicked the ear tips when shaving. She offered to apply treatment to the dog's ears and recommended home treatment as well. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-0.
We have the respondent on the phone. Would you please state your name for the record?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. Could you say that again? I'm sorry.
The respondent is on the phone. Would you please state your name for the record?
My name is Dr. Sarah Rios.
Thank you. And represented by counsel, please state your name for the record.
Oh, yes, my name is Todd King, on behalf of Dr. Rios.
Thank you. Dr. Rios, I give you up to 5 minutes to address the board. For your counsel.
Okay. So, can I clarify something? You write that the board has already dismissed the claim?
The board
has. She asked if the board has dismissed it already. It's the investigative
committee. No, it's not dismissed. It's recommended by the investigative
committee. It's recommended. Got it. Okay. Just wanted to clarify. Okay. Yeah. Then I'll go ahead and make my statement. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, thank you for the opportunity to address you today. I respectfully ask the board to dismiss this case for the following reason. My staff informed the owners before they brought Rocco to the facility that he would spend some time in a kennel which had ample bedding for his comfort. I called Rocco's owner before initiating any treatment and obtained her permission to treat his ear infection, clean his ears, ear plug and fully shaved ears, remove hair from the entrance of his ear canal, and administer medication in his ears. Despite due care, I inadvertently nicked Rocco's ear tips during his full ear save, which is a recognized complication of this procedure. Before discharge, Rocco had minor bleeding of both ear tips, which my staff cleaned with the loop chloramine before releasing Rocco. I explained to the owners that his head shaking, which is common after ear cleaning, and medication administration plus the making of the ears during the full shave could have caused minor bleeding of the ear tips. I offered to apply Dentacom spray to both of Rocco's ear tips, but the owner refused my treatment recommendation. I respectfully submit that my treatment of Rocco met the standard of care and asked the board to dismiss the case. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything to add?
Just briefly, because Dr. Reese's treatment of Rocco met the standard of care, there were no statutory violations, and we respectfully ask the board to dismiss the case. Thank you.
Thank you. We had no complaint today, and Ms. Frost, you are the lead.
So I did review the complaint and the response along with the investigative committee's discussion, and you know, unfortunately, ear infections, this sounds like probably more chronic ear infections. Certainly, there was quite a lot of irritation and definitely not ideal to mix the tips of the ears, but not unheard of either. So I would agree with the investigative committee, and I would make a motion to dismiss this case with no violation.
Second.
We have a motion on the floor and a second to dismiss case 21-139. Is there any further discussion? I was reading through this. I saw it as a customer service issue, really not medical to do with it at all. All right, any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of dismissing 21-139 say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes, and this case is dismissed. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
We'll go up to the top and do case 21-136.
Dr. Rios, you can disconnect the call.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye bye.
Carol, give us a summary, please.
Yes. Case 21-136. The complaint is Darlene Levin and Donnie Martin. The respondent is Neil Barrington, DDM. On March 15, 2021, Booby, a 12-year-old man, was presented to respondents associated with constipation. Diagnostics were recommended but declined. Approval was obtained to administer a diet enema, and the doctor was discharged. Later that day, the doctor was presented to respondent, not responsive. The doctor was hospitalized for treatment and diagnostics. Brady Grounds revealed collapse of L3, L4. The doctor continued to worsen and referred to an emergency facility was recommended. Complaints declined and elected to take the doctor home. It was later reported that the doctor had been humanely euthanized. And then it can be concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act occurred. It was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation.
The motion was approved with a vote of 2-1, with Dr. Rye opposed.
In this case, we have no respondent, no complaint, nobody monitored. And Dr. Rye, you are the lead.
Yes, so, yeah, after going through and looking at this and reading everything, it's an unfortunate situation. I know there's some questions about medical records, but I mean, going through and looking at everything, a referral was made, recommended, and declined. And we can't force people to do it. So, based on everything, I'd make a motion on this to dismiss with no action.
The motion on the floor and a second to dismiss case 21-136. Any further discussion? I guess Dr. Rae, you forgot to mention there was no
Decrops.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Any other discussion? All those in favor of dismissing 21-136, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion passes, and that case is dismissed. Next up is 21-140, Tracy Madrid's son, please.
Case 21-140, the complaint is J. Elaine McGuire. The respondent is Mark Lanagna, DDM. On April 21st, 2021, a 14-year-old female Russian blue cat was presented to respondent for anniversary urination. On exam, respondent copied an abdominal mass. Radiographs were performed to reveal the mass possibly coming out of the liver. Respondent discussed his findings with complaint and recommended an abdominal ultrasound. The cat was administered subcutaneous fluids and an injection of buprenorphine was discharged with an estimate for an abdominal ultrasound. Once home, the cat was quiet, which complainant attributed to the pain medication. On April 22nd, 2021, due to the cat's condition declining, the cat was presented to Pima Pet Clinic, where she was humanely euthanized. Complainant expressed concerns that respondent either overdosed the cat with buprenorphine or that the buprenorphine was an inappropriate medication to use on the cat. And the duty concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act factor, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion is approved with a vote of 4-0.
If there are no respondent, no complainant, and nobody monitoring, Dr. James, you're the lead.
Yeah, so this is case 21-140, and then reviewing this case, I mean, I think the diagnostics and physical examination and things that were done appropriately, any medication can cause issues and side effects, and we don't even know that that's what happened in this case. But the dosing and everything related to the buprenorphine was correct. So at this point, I would make a recommendation that we support the findings of the investigative committee and find the violations.
Second.
A motion on the floor and a second to dismiss case 21-140. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, it's noted in the report also that the complainant declined certain diagnostics, and I think that presents a whole bunch of additional challenges for the treatment of the pet when they're declined.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, let's take a vote. All those in favor of dismissing 21-140, say aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes, and that case is dismissed. Next up is 21-143. Tracy Madrid's son, I believe.
And this goes to 21-142 as well. And the summary is not the same in both cases. Case 21-141.
Wait. 143.
Oh, I'm sorry. Case 21-143. Complainant Carol A. Owen and respondent is Amanda Lee CDM. On January 6, 2020, Hannah and a 9-year-old female boxer nurse were presented to respondent for suspected conjunctivitis. Respondent evaluated the dog for prolonged diagnostics and discussed eye condition. On May 5th, 2020, respondent got rid of the dog again and continued her previously prescribed eye medication. This was the last time respondent got rid of the dog. On June 29th, 2020, the dog was presented to respondent's associate, Dr. Wood, due to concerns with the dog's vision. The dog had elevated ocular pressure in the left eye. Referred to an eye specialist was recommended, as well as studying treatment for glaucoma. On August 6, 2020, the dog was presented to eye care for animals for evaluation. We went again to continue the dog's glaucoma management at respondent's premises. And then the committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act have occurred, and it was moved and accepted that we dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
In this case, we have no respondent. Mr. Campbell monitoring?
Yes.
Right. And no complainant. Ms. Frost, you're the lead.
Yes. So, reading the original complaint, there was definitely confusion on timeline and who was where and when. My understanding was she was frustrated with an experience where she wanted to drop the dog off and there was going to be a fee for a day board. And so that triggered the complaint and kind of, you know, backdated questioning what had happened. Obviously the timeline didn't match what was in the medical record, and pressures were checked by the response. Beyond that, you know, obviously there was a different veterinarian involved, but, you know, reading the record, recommendations from the ophthalmologist weren't necessarily even solid. So I don't know that this case is really what the complaint says at face value. I think it's deeper, and they're upset with a fee, which is definitely more of an admin thing that we don't oversee. So I do agree with the investigative committee, and I would make a motion to dismiss with no violations.
Okay. And motion on the floor and a second to dismiss case 21-143. For further discussion. None. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion passes. 21-143 is dismissed. Next up is 21-144. Fixing the grids to start our report.
Yes. Case 21-144. The complaint is Maria. Leandrina, the respondent, is Chandra OPDM. On April 9, 2021, Nyla, a 2-year-old female healthy female, was presented to the respondent for evaluation of mass on the base of the tail. Respondent discussed surgical removal with histopathology to obtain a definitive diagnosis. On May 6, 2021, the dog was presented to the respondent as associated for the mass removal and histopathology. Complaint brought the dog back on May 11th, May 14th, May 17th, and May 21st for random changes and evaluation of the incision site. On May 21st, 2021, the surgical site was fully granulated down to a 2-millimeter area that was in the later stages of healing. No further ranging was necessary. Complaint expressed concerns that respondent would not speak with her regarding the dog's healing process and her desire to use unit buyout on the incision site. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. It was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved about the 4-0.
All right, we have no respondent. Nobody monitored, no complainant. And Dr. Wright, you are the lead.
Yes, thank you. So going through and reading this, there's just a lot of communication issues. That's the long and short of it here. I don't know if any of the communication issues rise to a violation or if it's just poor customer service. So definitely would like to see if you guys have any opinions on that, but it's definitely communication for the most part. I have another concern too, but it sounds like Ms. Sullivan has a comment.
Yes, I think a letter of concern might be appropriate here based on the communication issues.
Yeah, that's my big thing. It's like, I don't know not seeing the full violation, but it's definitely a concern. It's like you need to at least communicate a little bit. And I don't want to say that you have to be at the beck and call of a client by any means, because again, things are changing in veterinary medicine. I'll take maybe one or two phone calls in a day anymore, because each of them are 30 minutes long, and I can't do too many of those at the end of the day. I mean, so I can't fault a doctor for not directly talking to a client, but things need to be relayed properly. I do have a little concern. It always raises an eyebrow when I see technician appointments. So I'm kind of wondering what that means. And if anybody has any concerns around there, I guess, can I ask board staff a question at this point? Is this the responsible doctor at the hospital or on the premise?
I don't think it is.
Yeah, because I do get a little concerned about technician appointments, because we've talked about that a lot in the past. And is this a true appointment? Is the technician kind of playing doctor a little bit in those cases and saying, oh yeah, everything's healing fine, we're doing this, or is the doctor actually involved? So I have a question around there. I don't know if that's a separate possible case, or if that's something we can follow up in this one based on that.
Practices that have technician appointments,
yeah.
And usually it's like suture removals, and the technician will do the suture removal, and then they'll be like, hey, can you take a look at this? And somebody looks at it and goes, yeah, but it's not a full exam.
Yeah.
And it's just booked as like a technician appointment. I don't necessarily know that just because it's booked that way, mm-hmm. you can say necessarily that the technician is practicing medicine.
No,
I can't make that jump.
No, I agree. Yeah, that's why I'm like, kind of what is there, yeah. But I always wonder as people can push the line when I start seeing that being thrown out, like, well, there's no such thing as a true technician appointment in statute, so is that something that we're a little concerned about? Would that be something to fit into another concern too, or would it be something worth looking further into now? Again, based on everything here, I can't fully say that, yeah, technicians are doing exams. I just didn't know anybody else had any concerns based on that.
Well, we'd have to get into the definition of a technician exam. Should be going down a slippery slope.
Yeah, it's,
it all depends on what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Our practice pushes that way out, and we're now technicians making recommendations and diagnosis and seeing the point. But
yeah.
I've worked in a lot of practices that are current one and being a technician exam. So as long as you know, it's defined what a technician exam is. And what they can or can't do, I think it's fine.
Yeah, and that's honestly where my concern is, because we've had historically submissions with this, with certain hospitals wanting to allow vaccines, because it's just a really easy exam. It's like, no, that's not legally allowed. So it may be something that's just worth fitting into a letter of concern, just kind of addressing both of those things, because yeah, it is always a little concerning. It is something that's going to cross our plate here again pretty quick. I mean, we're going to be scared a lot more about mid levels and these kinds of things. So it's something we can kind of kick the can down the road a little bit, but we're going to have to address this essentially, I think.
I have a little bit of concern, though, with saying there's a letter of concern about a technician exam, but yet at the same time saying, oh, doctors don't have to talk to clients anymore, and technicians can do all of it. Because I actually find that what we've found post pandemic is that more of the issues are coming from the technicians talking to the clients, not actually examining the patients.
Yeah.
Then, like, I feel like veterinarians have kind of released their responsibility of, I don't need to talk to clients anymore, they're not in the room, I don't need to talk to them. And guess what? Now we're seeing the ramifications of that.
Yeah.
And we're putting that all on our technicians to do and to do correctly. But then at the same time, we're saying, oh, but you can't have a technician appointment to do a suture removal. Like, it's like totally different ends of the spectrum, and I'm like,
yeah.
Either give them credibility for being a technician, and you know your technicians and allow them to do what legally they're allowed to do, or don't, but don't make this it kind of wishy-washy.
Well, and that's the hard part, because we're bound by statute. We don't get to write those statutes, but
right.
I mean,
but
if you're diagnosing that decision is healthy and enough to take the sutures out, is the doctor making that call, or is the technician making that call?
You have to determine if your technician's able to make that call. And
well,
but
is a technician allowed to say, yeah, it's healed?
I think technicians should always be having the doctor look at it,
yes.
But I think technicians remove sutures all the time.
Oh, it's not removing the sutures,
yes.
That's the question. Is that incision healed up enough to remove
but
the sutures?
But that's still a technician appointment in my mind. So
but
I don't want to go down the path of.
Yeah, no, but what I'm saying is, how are you saying that incision is healed? is the technician legally qualified to say that?
Why are you saying that they're allowed to come to plans and...
So that's kind of a question.
Way down the rabbit hole, pull both of you out.
But that's a good question, and that's where we're gonna be coming from pretty quick, that's what I'm saying, is we keep throwing around technician appointments, and people are pushing the line, and people are doing more and more and more. Oh, it's just a booster vaccine, so we can do this. Oh, everything's fine. So, like I said, if we don't have any concerns on that, we don't need to investigate it further. But, I mean, that is a very concerning thing, and I think at a minimum, that would need to be the letter of concern. But I didn't know if anybody else has any more concerns to open up a further investigation on that.
I don't have concerns with the technician appointment. I have concerns with the lack of communication, that this doctor never talked to the owner and actually put all of that on her technicians. That's what I have a concern on.
So, well, I think that if the client was expressing concern, that's where, you know, it is the responsibility of the doctor to make sure that they're getting communication from their team and intervening when they need to. The rabbit hole of technician appointment or technician exam, I don't necessarily know is appropriate for this case, because I agree it's communication. There's definitely a lot more of that other topic. So I think as far as this goes, definitely my concern is with the communication, and really it's a lot thorough, right? It's not that there was communication, it's that it was circumvented. And that brought the case, you know, at least from what I read, to the board.
Yeah, so I'll make a motion to offer a letter of concern revolving around communication issues with the client and technician exams.
The motion for a second to offer a letter of concern. Ready for the discussion?
There was no exam done.
Well, no, they're talking about technician exams, and I think you need to be very careful about that. Or technician appointments.
No, there's a difference between an examination and an appointment.
Yes, there is, and that's why it's in a letter of concern, not a violation. So that's my motion.
And go to the upper down, and if it goes down,
Before we vote, I want to make sure I know what I'm voting on. Like, what's the word?
He must add both of them, communication and the appointment.
And making sure the technician is not crossing over the doctor's realm of, is a doctor looking at this badge saying everything's immaculate, doing everything fine, or is the technician just doing all the doctors over here doing something else, not looking?
Okay, so.
I just think we're using the term technician too loosely. Are we talking about CVPs?
It doesn't matter. That's not a defined statute. No, a CBT is not allowed to diagnose anything.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I think it does matter. So that's my point.
According to which statute?
Okay, we're going through. Out of this rabbit hole. So, in the record, when I first started reading this, I said, okay, yes, a little concerned that is this a. Appropriate for just technicians here, but then as I read on, it's an appointment, it's a bandage change. And at one of those bandage changes, when it's time to remove the sutures, the surgeon did look at the hand. So the surgeon made the evaluation, it's healing property, and I had no problem with the technician looking at see if it's red and inflamed or not.
Yeah, well, as long as the doctor's involved, that's all that matters.
And so the doctor was involved. So why are we running a letter of concern? Because just as an appointment, because all she did was change the bandage, and the doctor did look at it to see it's healing properly.
Because again, we just talked about this here, is we're concerned about the communication issue. Was the doctor even involved? Because there's no communication there. So again, was the technician doing all this because the doctor had nothing to say? So it's all kind of coming together. We were saying, does this doctor need to talk to this client? Is that a problem? Well, it's potentially an issue. That's why we're offering a letter of concern. Why did the technician, or why did the doctor not talk to this client? Because it was a technician exam. Was this technician only doing the exam and doing everything on their own? Or was the doctor even involved? And that's where my question comes in.
In the respondent's letter, she does state that she looked at it. The technician did do it, and the doctor viewed it as well.
So, for the variant and all that. But like I said, when there's no communication or anything there, it's just a question of, is that technician starting to cross the line and doing everything on their own? So that's why I would put it in the letter of concern, just to make sure we're doing everything here.
So that's still all communication, not the technical one.
No, it still is involved in there, because again, is the technician doing anything? Is the doctor's not talking to the client at all?
I think it needs to be
so. That's my motion. You guys can vote it down if you want to and make another one. But that's my motion. It's going to say yeah.
But I think you could do that. You could say the letter of concern is around the amount of communication that the doctor had with the client and whether the technician was doing more than what the, you know, more of the communication than what was appropriate in the case. That's not addressing the technician appointment or exam, right? Because that's a, that gets into something that I'm like, I could see this veterinarian reading that going, well, why is that a problem? What is that? Why did I do? Whereas if we keep it centered around the communication piece, then it's clear whether it's through a technician appointment or whether it's through the technician taking all your phone calls and you never talking to a client or whether it's through whatever, you need to make sure that you're communicating with the client and your technician is not overstepping the boundaries on what they should be doing.
Which is exactly what my doctor is saying.
But it's, you're lumping it into this appointment. I think that's just
to make sure that the doctor is involved in doing everything they need to be doing.
Right, but so, I would
so
just
we're saying the same thing.
I don't think there's anything wrong with the appointment. I don't think there's anything wrong with the technician.
There could be. That's what a letter of concern is about. There could be.
But
that's what a letter of concern is. So I'm going to make my motion to stand. My motion is standing.
No, it's not that we're not agreeing. I just think that we have to understand the wording of the letter before we can vote on it. I can't vote on a motion that I don't understand what's going into the wording of the letter.
What you just said is involving that. You just want to leave out that technician. What you're saying is you're concerned about that for you too.
So if we're leaving that out, then I'm voting on it. If we're not leaving it out, we're going to specifically call out the technician exam.
Let's just vote on
that. That I don't know.
He wants this.
I'm gonna
call it out.
Yeah, so I don't know. What is it? What is it forced to vote?
Well, can you restate what you're putting in your letter of concern?
Well, what we just said.
Hey, your chairman has called. Discussion is over. And we're going to call it, and we're going to take a vote.
Yeah.
Let's do a voice or a roll call.
But Mr. I'm sorry to interrupt, but to be clear, the motion is to issue a letter of concern, and in expressing the concern, you want to specifically reference the appointment.
Making sure the technician's not doing too much during their technician appointments and overstepping into the doctor's realm.
So it's a little bit more specific than the Dr. James' summary of the letter.
Yeah, still the same concerns. I just was verbalizing my concern more on that.
Thank you for that. I just want to make sure everybody understands what they're voting on.
Yeah, it's just, the other concern is there's concern that maybe this could be an issue if we didn't. We're going further looking.
Thank you, Dr. Byrne.
All right. Do roll call.
Dr. Byrne?
Nay.
Ms. Greer?
Nay.
Ms. Frost?
Nay.
Dr. James?
Nay.
Mr. Lilly?
Nay.
Dr. Nosley?
Nay.
Ms. Solomon?
Nay.
Dr. Johnson?
Nay.
And Dr. Ryder's not. Motion fails.
You second.
In the case of 21-144, I would make, because that's a little more on me.
Yes.
I would make a motion that we find no violations but send a letter of concern regarding the communication with client and ensuring that our clients are getting their questions and things answered by the doctor.
Second.
Inspire the advice example.
I didn't say anything about the appointment.
All right, the motion for a second. Is there any further discussion?
That's a little concerning because we're saying the doctor has to talk to the client at all times based on that.
No, I didn't say that.
They're answering questions.
I said that they
were
just
saying
making
that
sure the client is getting the proper communication. I didn't say
it's
it every
from
time.
The doctor, so.
Yeah,
so
I think the doctor
sure
needs to talk to an owner. I have a real big concern with the fact that doctors think that they don't ever have, never did this client get to talk to the doctor.
That's right. That's what I'm concerned about that too.
Okay. That's what my letter of concern is.
So, I would echo the concern about the doctor not calling because all it took was a phone call, and not only we spent on this case, it never would have got here.
Yeah.
Just one call.
Yeah.
5 minutes, not 30.
Tried it off
and but you have your technician saying, screaming about some bleeding to death, you have to get off the phone. Sorry, I'm gonna
go.
All right. Motion for issue letter concern, scale back. Mm-hmm. Communications. And that's Google.
Dr. Gerber?
Aye.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. Gaines?
Aye.
Mr. Lilly?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Nay.
Ms. Sullivan?
Aye.
Dr. Johnson?
Aye.
Was an aye, sir?
Aye.
Okay, and Dr. Johnson, any motion carries?
All right, so that is done for 21, 24, change your letter of concern.